Did you know that in Ohio, the state Supreme Court could just ignore the reproductive rights amendment we passed last year?
But so many Ohioans voted for it.
That's why we need to keep extremists out of the court by voting for Justices Donnelly, Stewart, and Forbes.
I don't know if I can remember that.
Here's the trick. Just remember, don't stop fighting. DSF. Donnelly, Stewart, and Forbes. If you supported Issue 1 last year, don't stop fighting. Vote for Donnelly, Stewart, and Forbes.
This message was paid for by Red, Wine, and Blue.
This episode of Writing Excuses has been brought to you by our listeners, patrons, and friends. If you would like to learn how to support this podcast, visit www.patreon.com/writingexcuses.
Season 19, Episode 42. This is Writing Excuses.
A close reading on structure. Whose perspective is it anyways?
15 minutes long because you're in a hurry.
And we're not that smart.
I'm Dong Lun.
I'm Aaron.
And I'm Howard, and I'm definitely not that smart after having read this book. We talked a little bit about it last week, and this book is on my list of things that make me wish I was a much, much better writer. But Aaron, you pitched this to us.
Yes.
Take us away.
Speaking of things we talked about last week, we say this for every book. We're going to spoil it. If you're going to read the book, go read the book and then come back. But I think for this one, we're going to get deeper into spoilers just because we're talking about structure. And structure means talking about the entire thing. And so that means that if you, one more time, this is your final chance to run off, read the book, and come back before we get into it. Because the first question I have is, wow, when did you asked me this earlier, realize that all the perspectives basically in this book are the same person? Spoiled.
It took me a long time to realize all three were connected. I don't remember when the exact moment was. I read this book when it came out years and years ago. So going into this reread that I did, you know, last week, I kind of already had that in my head that Cyanite, Demaya, and Esun are all the same person. Which is just one of these absolute masterful reveals. Like, once you start to clock it, once you start to understand the structure of it, and we're going to talk a little bit more about this next week when we get into parallelism, but, you know, just the, going back to our tension segment, the contextual tension that arises from understanding this structural thing completely just was like a 90 degree shift on my own perspective as a reader of what was happening in this book. All the horrible things that happened to Demaya, once you realize that the horrible things that are happening to Esun, that's one contiguous line of trauma and tragedy, just is absolutely devastating to me.
Yeah.
Boy, the moment when Demaya takes the name Cyanite was the moment when I realized, oh, then obviously Cyanite becomes Esun, and this whole storyline that I'm so invested in of Cyanite building a life is not going to end well. And now I have sadness.
Yeah.
Even though the bad things haven't happened yet.
Yeah.
Which is interesting because the book ends, the book begins with this is how the world ends. And so you'd think, when we're told we're rolling the clock back a little bit, I would already have accepted that's all going to end in sadness. Just chill out and go for that. No.
I mean,
she's a better writer than that.
One of my favorite things that she does is once Cyanite gets to the island, right after after, you know, she pulls on the obelisk and destroys the city and, you know, ends up on the island. There's this passage in the middle where N.K. Jemisin is just like, I'm not going to tell you about this part because this was nice. You had a good life here. You felt happiness here. You know, you were raising your son. You had these two lovers. You were in this beautiful polycule that is like so idealized. Like, and it's you get a sense of how beautiful her life is for these few months here or a couple years here. And the jump in that perspective and her saying that is so, that's not what this book is. And the narrative trick of doing that, of using the POV of the book just to be like, I'm going to hurt you more, and I'm going to tell you how good this was just to hurt you more, but I'm also not going to let you linger in the luxury of that moment.
Yes, I absolutely. It is a sad book, but I think it's one of those things, Howard, we were talking not while being recorded about looking at spoilers for episodes of television and still enjoying it because you should be able to see it unfold. And I think one of the things that's nice about that realization is that you know the bad thing is coming, but in some ways it only heightens to get back to tension.
Yep.
The structure is there to build the tension. Do you know what I mean? Like, and one question I have thinking about it is, would this story have worked as well without all those perspective shifts? Like if it was just told start to finish all in first person, or if it was told, you know, were those POV shifts needed in order to tell the story, do you think, that was being told?
I think that the lesson there is the general lesson of in media res, which is that you typically do in media res when a strictly chronologically linear telling won't align emotional arcs in ways that give the book one beginning, one middle, and one end. In order for this book to have one beginning, one middle, and one end, we had to carve the timeline into three pieces so we get three beginnings, three middles, and three ends for maximum impact. And
yeah, I mean, the narrative trick of this book is, the central question of it is, why did Alabaster break the world? Why does Alabaster do this thing, right? And by the end of the book, we're kind of on his side, right? Like, the trick of this book is to get us from the point of, the world is ending, let's resist it, that's a bad thing, to, the world is ending, and by God, it needed to end. And I don't think you get that without consistently asking yourself the question of, why did Alabaster do this thing? Especially once you start to realize that it was Alabaster that did it. And, you know, all the things that you see along the way, from Shaffa breaking Demaya's hand, to Cyanide and Alabaster going to the node maintainer, to, you know, the Guardian showing up, to, you know, the island, all of those things are just this world is so broken already. Alabaster is just manifesting in reality what metaphorically has been happening this whole time.
Yeah, it almost makes me think, I was thinking like, which, they're all load-bearing, but I was thinking like, which of the POVs do I think is like the most load-bearing? And I sometimes think that it's Demaya, because I think that's the like breakdown of the, like the way that we think people should treat each other is the most broken down in the worst way. We were talking earlier about the hand scene. No bueno.
Yeah. Oh boy. Especially on rereading, knowing it was coming, I was just like clawing my face off, just being like, no, I don't want this to happen again. You know, I just don't want this to happen in the first nice relationship Demaya's ever had in her life. But you know Shaffa is bad. Like, you can just feel the ways in which he is off and menacing, and you can see the abusive patterns he's putting into place as he makes her wholly dependent on him emotionally and physically. And so when it gets to that moment of exerting that control and the calm, cold, cheerful way he breaks her hand, the fact that he tells her it's coming, right? It is metaphorically kind of what N.K. Jemisin is doing to us. She is telling us, hey, I'm going to break your hand over the course of this book.
Mm.
And then she does it because, you know, once we realize that all three POVs are the same POV, it's like, where's Corunda? What happened to the kid that she had before?
Yeah.
And we also know that the book opens with a child dying, right? And so, like, we've already started in such a bad place. How is this going to get worse? And yet it does, right?
Yeah, I think each of the POVs, kind of what you were saying, Howard, like, three beginnings, three middles, three ends. Like, and each one sets us up in some way for a different version of the same like traumatic journey in a lot of ways,
which is why I can't pick one that's load bearing. All three are load bearing to me, right? The broken grief of Esun, but also the most together and healthy version is sort of Esun in a lot of ways. You know, seeing Demaya as a child, what this world does to children, seeing how Cyanide is treated as she's like trying to be in the world and realizing she can't be, right? Like, I think all three of those are such important perspectives. And it would make sense to have those as separate characters, which is why I was convinced for so long that they weren't the same person. I was like, it's too obvious for them to this. I mind tricked myself.
You
I was
always,
like,
nah,
it's not
yourself.
The same person. You know, maybe we're supposed to think that, but it's a double bluff or whatever. And then I was like, nope, that was just what it is. Yeah. So
I think this would be a perfect time for us to go to our break.
Hi, friends. Let me tell you about this very cool special edition of one of our Close Reads books for this season. It's the Orbit Gold Edition of the Broken Earth Trilogy by N.K. Jemisin. This is so beautiful. The set includes, get this, an exclusive box illustrated by Justin Cherry Nephilomancer, a signed copy of the fifth season, fabric-bound hardcover editions of the trilogy, gilded silver edges, color end paper art, oh my god, brand new foil-stamped covers, a ribbon bookmark, and an exclusive bonus scene from the fifth season. The bonus scene! I wants it! Just pre-order before November 19th to get 20% off, and you can lock in your signed copy. Again, I say, your signed copy of the fifth season. Visit orbitgoldeditions.com to order.
Kurzgesagt, in a nutshell, is a YouTube program that... Okay, hang on. Yes, my description is short and in a nutshell-ish, but the title is Kurzgesagt in a Nutshell. See, they take big concepts from multiple scientific disciplines and communicate them to us with delightfully stylized animation, original music, and a soothing British accent. My favorite Kurzgesagt videos cover topics like Fermi's paradox, supervolcanoes, vaccines, and fun questions like what would happen if Earth got kicked out of the solar system. If, like me, you enjoy learning new things, you will definitely enjoy Kurzgesagt in a Nutshell.
This episode of Writing Excuses is sponsored in part by Acorns. Money can be a difficult topic for writers and creative professionals. It's not like earning a regular paycheck that comes in at reliable intervals. It requires more careful planning to make sure that that advance covers you not just this year, but sets you up for the future as well. Learning to invest and be smart with your money takes time and research, and it's easy to put that off in favor of short-term goals. I encourage all the writers I work with to read up on the options out there and do their homework to figure out what makes sense for them. Acorns makes it easy to start automatically saving and investing in your future. You don't need a lot of money or expertise to invest with Acorns. In fact, you can get started with just your spare change. Acorns recommends an expert-built portfolio that fits you and your money goals, then automatically invests your money for you. Head to acorns.com/WX or download the Acorns app to start saving and investing your future today. Client testimonial compensation provides incentive to positively promote Acorns. Investing involves risk. Acorns Advisors, LLC, an SEC-registered investment advisor. View important disclosures at acorns.com/WX.
Going back to POV a little bit, you know, I said right before the break that in some ways this whole book is Shafa breaking Demaya's hand, right? Like in some ways N.K. Jemisin is kind of doing that to us. I want to talk about the use of second person here, right? And I think that's one of the most interesting things and one of the most like famous things about this book is that large chunks of it are in the second person. It's direct address to the audience. I have a personal theory I want to run by y'all, and I'm kind of curious what you think, but
I'm excited to hear it.
There was a moment in science fiction fantasy publishing right around when this book was coming out. We were seeing a lot of second person works. It was a lot of second person short stories and like novellas. And then, you know, very famously this book. I feel like that was coming from a lot of marginalized authors because they were sort of starting to write fiction that was about their experience. And this book is very much, I read it as very much about the experience of being Black in America. And I think the second person removes the sort of distance the reader has from the text because it is grabbing you and forcing you into the subjectivity of an origin here, right? It's forcing us into the subjectivity of what it is to be exploited or marginalized in this society. And I think second person is a thing that a lot of marginalized authors reach for because it doesn't let the mainstream audience shy away from it.
Yeah, I was going to say really quickly that I agree. I have had a similar theory, which is that it's also a way, I don't know if it's intentional or not, but it sort of puts readers who are used to being centered and comfortable and makes them uncomfortable. And so in some ways it is a marginalizing experience for the reader.
Yeah.
And so it is in some, it can be the best way to have the text do the thing to you that the world has done to the author in some ways. And I think that is something that people were finding and using really effectively throughout.
And that's the exact point that I want to take a step back from, and maybe a step, you know, a 10,000 foot view above. I had an editor tell me that he just hated the fact that I was trying to tell stories in first person present tense, because his response was, if the story is unfolding right now, how is it in the book that I'm holding? And there was this need, apparently, for a literal reason for the book to exist in his hands, which is kind of silly, because a science fiction book about something that's happening in the future, or a fantasy book about something that happened on a completely different world, justifying the existence of the book in your hands is a ridiculous exercise. The ability to accept that there is no point in the ridiculous exercise. The book exists as an artifact from an author who wants you to feel a thing. The way the story is told, whether it's first person, second person, whatever, is an exercise in making you feel a thing. Mm-hmm. And the use of Essen's point of view as always being, you know, you do this, you do that, you know, you did this, you saw that, made me feel much differently about Essen's events than I felt about Cyanites, or than I felt about Demaya's, which means it's an effective authorial tool, and I just need to accept it whether or not I actually like it or think I could do it.
Mm-hmm. You know, it's funny that you bring up the first-person present tense thing, because I see pushback on that all the time, and I get very frustrated by it personally, because I think it can be a really wonderful tool to tell a story. But what's interesting to me is it harkens back to the origins of the novel, right? Early novels all were epistolary in some way. It was, we found this journal. Somebody is telling this story. It was always had to be framed in the context of, this document exists for a reason. We're going to explain to you why it exists, which again is very funny, because epistolary is usually second person, right? It is written in a form of direct address, either as a letter or a document or a narrator orating to you what the story is, right? And so it's almost like, we've kind of gone full circle in a way as we've come to the modern idea of the novel as a more abstract thing that we can have in fundamental suspension of disbelief as we read it and ignore, and just we are in the mind of a character who's experiencing something in the moment without needing to understand how we got there, is a little bit of a suspension of disbelief. But somehow in this novel, returning to the second person is hearkening back to an older mode of writing that I think really sort of busts through that suspension disbelief and sort of grabs you by the collar and says, pay attention to me, you know?
And when I said, you know, whether or not you like writing things in this way, or think you can, I realized as I was reading this, I actually write in second person quite a bit, on social media.
Mm-hmm.
That feeling when you discover with your foot that your dog has been sick.
Ew.
You know, that's a, mm-hmm. That style of tweet is there all the time. Does it work as well if I say, you know, that feeling when I discovered with my foot that my dog was sick?
Is this book a whole TFW, that feeling when I discovered that my entire society is predicated on the exploitation of other people?
Okay, and
we're all there. That's,
I'm just going to
2020, baby.
I'm here to say that's a valid question. Is Essen's point of view an elongated TFW secondary world fantasy tweet?
Yeah. You know, it's funny thinking about like where we came from in the novel and first person present tense makes me think. This is a bit of a wild theory, so stick with me. But I think that there was a period of time in which the authorial voice was like being, there was like a kind of consistent authorial voice in a lot of works where it was like this sort of like, I don't know, just a all authors are the same. It wasn't as much of like the voicey work that you see in first person. It would be really voicey first person, and then third person and other texts didn't have it as much. And I was just thinking, there are people who tell stories in real life in first person present tense. And that's a different type of person than tells a story in first person past tense. There are people who tell like in real life, use somebody who's like, oh, okay. Okay. I got to tell you what's going on. Okay. Yeah. So picture it. She's in the store. Like there are people who speak like that.
Yeah.
And I think what I like about it is that it forces you to think about who is telling the tale. And I think that there sometimes is a resistance or a tension where people don't want to think about who's telling the tale and they actually feel like it distances them from it. But I really like the idea that somebody has decided to put this story in your hands. How did they do it in real time? I don't know, but they did, and they did it as an action. And I think it's something that makes stories really active for me in an interesting way.
Well, again, this is the flip, the other side of why second person is so exciting in this is it's the mystery throughout. As soon as that first second person section dropped, like just slipped in there, just a little you all of a sudden, I lost my mind because I was like, who's telling this story to who, right? Like, and so the eventual reveal close to the end when you realize this is Hoa talking to Asun is him telling the story of her own life back to her from his perspective as a stone eater was just this thing that I'm still not quite sure what it means. I've read the whole trilogy. There's a way in which I don't fully have my head around why does it have to be him telling her the story? But there's something in that that was such an exciting reveal that answering the question of who is telling the story and for whom was, I don't know, it was thrilling. It was a massive structural trick.
There's another question that we don't have time to answer, but I desperately want to ask, which is by carving up the timeline of one life into three perspectives, one of the statements that I felt was being made is, at any given time in your life, you are a different person than you were before. And why is it three different people instead of five or instead of two? How many different people would my life be if I were trying to tell this kind of story? I think about these things a lot. And am I angry that a novel made me think about them again and still have no answers? Yes, a little. Yes, I am.
But I also love the way in which she's the same person throughout. Like the headstrongness of Demaya is the same as the headstrongness of Asun, right? The instinct to action we see in Cyanite over and over again that gets her into trouble is the same instinct to action we see in Asun, right? And the rebelliousness of Demaya, right? And then we see relationships from Demaya and Cyanite affecting Asun's life in such dynamic ways.
And this is a perfect time to take us to our homework. Homework for this week is to think about the main character of your story and carve their life up into a couple of pieces, and then have one of those pieces write a letter to another and make that a second person story.
I love that.
This has been Writing Excuses. You're out of excuses. Now go write. Have you ever wanted to ask one of the Writing Excuses hosts for very specific, very you-focused help? There's an offering on the Writing Excuses Patreon that will let you do exactly that. The private instruction tier includes everything from the lower tiers, plus a quarterly one-on-one Zoom meeting with a host of your choice. You might choose, for example, to work with me on your humorous prose, engage Dong Wan's expertise on your worldbuilding, or study with Aaron to level up your game writing. Visit patreon.com/writingexcuses for more details.
Writing Excuses has been brought to you by our listeners, patrons, and friends. For this episode, your hosts were Mary Robinette Kowal, Dong Wan Song, Aaron Roberts, and Howard Taylor. This episode was engineered by Marshall Carr Jr., mastered by Alex Jackson, and produced by Emma Reynolds. For more information, visit writingexcuses.com.
Did you know that in Ohio, the state Supreme Court could just ignore the Reproductive Rights Amendment we passed last year?
But so many Ohioans voted for it.
That's why we need to keep extremists out of the court by voting for Justices Donnelly, Stewart, and Forbes.
I don't know if I can remember that.
Here's the trick. Just remember, don't stop fighting. DSF. Donnelly, Stewart, and Forbes. If you supported Issue 1 last year, don't stop fighting. Vote for Donnelly, Stewart, and Forbes.
This message was paid for by Red, Wine, and Blue.